Hey, listeners, welcome back to the Busby Babe podcast. Today is a sort of special event episode. We are recording in honor of Rivalry Week at SB Nation. And I'd like to welcome my esteemed guest, Mark Kastner from the Liberal Offside.
Howdy. Thanks for having me.
So, Mark, how much does this 4-0 loss hurt today, knowing that, you know, Manchester City just got the best of you guys once again?
I mean, they're still 20 points behind, so I don't really care. And just like any game that happens in the summer in July, like, it's a friendly, right? So you can't really take too much away from it.
Right. It doesn't really count.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I was a little bit bothered in the first half. Like, I did want, you know, the Guard of Honor stuff was kind of all the pregame talk, and I did want to see Liverpool kind of come out and put out a performance. But I think it's understandable for them to kind of be hungover, so to speak.
Yeah. I think the fact that they put out a full-strength 11 definitely gave Twitter the impression that this was a game they wanted to win. But, like you said, you've got such a huge cushion, and Manchester City are really the only ones that have to prove something for the rest of the season between the two games.
Like, City's lineup, I think, was way more interesting. This would have been only the third time that their quote-unquote first-choice 11 would have played together this season. That also includes Champions League games. So I think that was more about Klopp wanting some sort of, like, see what he's got, you know, maybe for next season or whatever. But, you know, City's lineup was interesting. It didn't Riyad Mahrez didn't start. Phil Foden started in his place. Eric Garcia started at center back. You know, Benjamin Mendy started at left back. And I think, like, with those three in particular, they had some pretty solid performances that I think Pep kind of wanted to build on instead of trusting, like, maybe his older guys. I just thought maybe that was probably the most interesting thing.
Yeah, Goal.com tweeted that Phil Foden was the youngest English player to have a goal and an assist in the Premier League, which is inaccurate because Mason Greenwood is 2 years younger, and he did it 2 days ago.
Yeah, yeah. So, it was like, I mean, stuff like that. Didn't Goal.com, maybe it was Bleacher Report or one of those accounts, also do, like, oh, Raheem Sterling got his revenge on...
Yeah.
It's like, okay, first of all, this is like his 13th or 14th game against Liverpool, and it's his first real goal.
Yeah.
And, like, again, they're in second by 20 points, which if the season were to end today, it would be the most points second place has ever been behind.
Yeah.
I won't bring up the previous record.
Yeah. And this is also Raheem Sterling's first goal against either Liverpool or Manchester United. So kind of nice transition to the actual powerhouses of English football here. the great rivalry.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's so funny to think about. And we started this. What are they calling it? Project Restart? Is that the official thing?
I guess so, yeah.
We started our first game back was against Everton, which is Liverpool's local rival, and really haven't been a rival on the field, at least in my lifetime. I know that Everton was kind of okay in the 90s and then also kind of okay in the mid-aughts, but not nearly at the peak of English football, that's for sure, like they were in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I don't really have, like, a point other than I don't think there's anything that really touches the rivalry between Liverpool and Manchester United in English football and maybe even in the world.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of unique in English football because the Derby is such a massive day in any, you know, big footballing city, especially Manchester, Liverpool, London, you see it a lot. But I don't think that either Liverpool or Manchester United fans would say that Everton or City is a bigger rival for their respective club.
No, and like even in recent years, like within the last 10 years or so, like Manchester City has come out of nowhere with their billions and billions of pounds of transfers and illegal things that they've done. But even when I watch the Manchester Derby, even when I watch that game, it's sort of like, yeah, this is good, but it's not the same. Like, it's just not the same, and it never will be the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, ever since the takeover of Manchester City in 2009, it still feels like it's a bigger deal for City winning those than it does for United. I mean, there have been a couple really intense wins for United where it was perhaps more symbolic over a City team that has gotten the better of us in terms of trophies over the last decade. But
like the two this year? Or...
Yeah. Well, I think the one at Old Trafford that was like right before the COVID shutdown, I think bears a lot on the memory of Man United fans because that's the last time we've seen fans actually in the stadium. And it really was like pretty electric throughout the game. And, you know, we had the better chances in the first half. And then Scott McTominay scores that, you know, on the net near the halfway line. Yeah. But, I mean, earlier in the season when we beat them at the Etihad, you know, maybe it felt kind of dead because it was at the Etihad, but it was just like, okay, cool, 3 points, you know?
Yeah. And I think, like, even today, like, you know, the last 2.5-3 seasons, it's kind of been Liverpool City, like, probably mm-hmm. ever since we beat them in that Champions League game.
Yeah.
We beat them, like, 2 months before in the league.
It was City's first loss, I think, that season.
Yeah. Yeah, the season they went and got 100 points. Kind of ever since then, there's been this rivalry between Liverpool and City. And then, like, even before that, you have Pep and Klopp back in Germany. And there have been exciting games, certainly. Like, I'm very fond of that game, that first game in particular where we beat them, where we go 4-1 up, actually, and then they claw two back right before the end there. But that just feels more like Manchester City at this point, now that I think Liverpool have won the title, especially, they just feel like an obstacle to Liverpool. They're just the opponent that's in the way and not so much a rival. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's especially like I think the amount of money that they've spent and this kind of like massive force in football that they want to think that they are, it really makes them kind of maybe the most hated team in Britain at the moment is Manchester City, just because of kind of what they symbolize in football in general. But they don't have that historic fear factor to them that I think when you see them play in Europe, I mean, they didn't get out of or maybe they got out of the round of 16 once, but until like the 2016 season, they spent 4 or 5 years in the Champions League and really didn't look like they belonged, despite the fact that they had won 2 Premier League titles.
Yeah, I think the farthest they'd gotten was the semifinal, and that was the year before Pep came, so... and we knocked them out the 1 year, our first year back, to the 2018 season, 17-18, I should say. And like that's the thing that City has always wanted since they've started this project in 2009. Like, they've wanted a Champions League or multiple Champions League, and
it's kind of what Pep's wanted ever since he left Barcelona.
Yeah, he's never won one without Messi. So, and Messi hasn't won one without him. Is that correct?
No, they won the treble in 2015.
That's
it was
right.
under Enrique. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. That was Suarez's first season there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And that's when everything started going really wrong for Liverpool. But yeah, it's just interesting that like last season was, you know, 97 and 98 points for both teams. City wins the league. Liverpool goes on to win the Champions League. And it's just sort of like, oh, okay. Like there's, I just, that's such a fascinating thing. And then, you know, I think the commentary Lee Dixon was mentioning on the American commentary during the game sometime in the second half that is it a 42-point swing between these two teams? No, 48-point swing at the beginning of the game today between the three seasons where when City won the title with 100 points, Liverpool finished with 75. At the start of this game today, Liverpool were 23 points ahead of City. So that's a Liverpool's made up 45 points there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's safe to say that Liverpool have done the best job of any club in England of kind of trusting a plan. Whereas City, the summer after Pep's first season, spent an ungodly amount of money, I think. Or I think that was the season they spent an ungodly amount of money. It was like £300 million in one summer. And
most of that was on fullbacks.
Yeah. They brought in a lot of defenders, and then they bring in, since then they've brought in, you know, Bernardo Silva and Riyad Mahrez, other players in positions where they already had starters and just kind of, you know, loaded up on talent. But I think with Liverpool, you kind of see, like, a philosophy of Jurgen Klopp, obviously. So there's this, like, vision of how he wants a team to play. And kind of working with the players that he already had, in a way, because we've seen Sadio Mane kind of turn into a different player than I think what everyone saw from him when he was at Southampton. And even Mohamed Salah, to an extent, he wasn't like a goal machine when he was in Italy before he came over. But now he's, you know, part of one of the most successful front threes in the history of the Premier League. And then a midfield that a lot of people didn't necessarily rate that highly at the beginning of last season has now, you know, become one of the most controlling forces in British football.
Yeah, like Gianni Wijnaldum was relegated with Newcastle. Mm-hmm. Jordan Henderson, like, Jordan Henderson's kind of a funny thing because you ask any Liverpool fan that will be honest with you, at a stage of Jordan Henderson's Liverpool career, I think every single Liverpool fan would have sold him. Mm-hmm. And even Brendan Rodgers tried to do a swap deal on deadline day with Fulham in 2013. He wanted to send Jordan Henderson to Fulham for Clint Dempsey, of all people. And here he is, the first captain to lift the Premier League trophy since Alan Hansen, that's right. There was a captain in between there that I'm forgetting his name, but he didn't win a Premier League trophy.
Yeah, and he got close a couple times, so I think they slipped up.
Yeah, I think he was pretty good though. Yeah. And then you have Fabinho, who started his career at Real Madrid, got kind of casted off there. I think he made two appearances for Real Madrid total. Goes to Monaco, kind of makes a name for himself, but he's still not even getting into the Brazilian national team side ahead of.
Wasn't he also a fullback at Monaco? He hadn't really like nailed down one position specifically.
Yeah, he's a fullback, kind of utility midfielder. And then I think the season before Liverpool bought him, he kind of made defensive midfield his own. So, yeah, he's okay.
And
Liverpool have spent a lot of money at the time of buying their center back and their goalkeeper. They both were world record transfer fees at those positions.
Yeah.
You know, Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino, and Mo Salah all cost north of £30 million. So it's not like they haven't spent money. Mm-hmm. They spent a ton of money on Naby Keita, and he can't even break into the midfield. So. But I don't think it's so much about not, you know, winning the transfer wars, so to speak. It's about like what you're buying with that money. And
yeah,
they've had so many hits. Like they've all basically been perfect. Naby Keita is still, jury's still out on him, but he's only 24. So
right. What, I think, yeah. I guess to use an American sports analogy, when during the NFL or the NBA draft, you always hear people talk about draft value, about, you know, what kind of quality player you can get with X amount of pick or whatever. And with the transfers, obviously it's very different, but Liverpool have built a squad of, I mean, I don't think anybody in the world would argue Virgil van Dijk was not worth the £70 million that Liverpool spent.
No.
But, you know, in the same back four, you have Robertson, who cost, what, like £5 million?
It was £7 million, and it was, like, technically, I don't really know how that transfer really worked out. Like, we gave Hull £7 million, and then they gave us, like, £7.5 million for some guy named Kevin Stewart. And that happened on the same exact day.
Yeah.
So, they made money on that, on getting in Andy Robertson, which is weird.
Yeah. They made a lot more than money.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of that, you've got Trent Alexander-Arnold, who comes up from the academy. You know, you've got Dejan Lovren, who I think a lot of people thought was a bust. You've also got Matip, who was considered a bust at times. But
Klopp is free.
Yeah. I mean, Klopp has found a way to get value out of these players that, you know, like you said with Jordan Henderson, a lot of Liverpool fans probably were not ready to keep.
Yeah, or they, and to be fair to some Liverpool fans, I think they wanted to keep him, but they certainly didn't want him to be captain, and they certainly didn't want him to be first choice. And in Klopp's first three seasons, he played Jordan Henderson at the six to sort of build his philosophy around. And I don't know if it was always the plan to like replace Jordan Henderson at the six and move him far forward, you know, further up on the right side of that midfield. But like the Champions League run into the final where Karius literally throws it into his net, like that doesn't happen without kind of that tempo that Jordan Henderson has set in this team. And I think that intensity comes from Jordan Henderson primarily. Well, obviously it comes from Jurgen Klopp because he's an intense guy. I don't know if you've noticed that, but
heavy metal football.
Yeah. But that without Jordan Henderson in the side, that tempo and that like kind of those things you can't really see in the stats, like the passion, those late goals, kind of everything.
The intangibles.
Yeah. Everything that makes this Liverpool team this Liverpool team, I think, comes from Jordan Henderson. There's been, you know, some chatter about him winning PFA Player of the Year. I don't think he should. I still think it should probably be Kevin De Bruyne or maybe Sadio Mane. But it's like, I think it's kind of just that he's in the conversation is testament to him and also Jurgen Klopp's long-term plan, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm. So with this long-term plan, what point would you say you thought this was like happening where they had definitively gained momentum that wasn't stopping?
I'm going to give you kind of a weird answer because it definitely wasn't this season. It was, I think it goes all the way as far back as those Manchester City games we were talking about. But even then, we were still losing to West Brom and the Stokes and stuff, or like giving up three goals to Bournemouth of all teams. Mm-hmm. I think the moment I knew that Liverpool was going to win the title was actually Southampton away last season. When it's tied 1-1, Mo Salah runs through and makes it 2-1, and then Jordan Henderson also ultimately makes it 3-1. I thought at the time we were going to win the title then, that season. It just took a year and a couple of months later for that to actually happen. But I think if we're talking about this season, funny enough, it's also Southampton away, because that was the weekend after we won the Super Cup that went to extra time and penalties. Adrian was in goal because Alisson had gotten hurt against against Norwich in the first 45 minutes of that game. And I believe Liverpool won 2-1, I want to say. Let me fact check myself as I'm talking. But you beat Chelsea in Istanbul in crazy heat, fly back, and then I think that's the same weekend that City dropped points. They tied 2-2 or something. Yeah, Liverpool won 2-1 against Southampton with the late Firmino goal. I just kind of like, it was like the second weekend of the year. It was still August, and I was like, I think this is it. Yeah. And then we obviously haven't not been in first place since. So
And I don't know. I think the end of last season even has kind of bled through for Liverpool. I think maybe doing that well and not winning the Premier League still probably galvanized them a little bit. But they had some, after they had that period where they drew a bunch of games, and that's where they kind of fell behind, like barely to City, they had a couple of games where it looked like they were down and out, and they still came back and won. I think they had a kind of exercising past demons game against Chelsea, where Mo Salah scored a brilliant goal. And then they had a comeback win against Rafa Benitez's Newcastle that I remember being really frustrated by in the last minutes of that.
Divock Origi scoring. Yeah. That was the game. That was actually the game before the Barcelona comeback, because Mo Salah got hurt. He got a concussion in that game.
Yeah, if we're going to talk about games that frustrated me, that Barcelona one is perfect.
I think that's an interesting conversation to have during a Rivalry Week podcast. What is a Manchester United fan thinking during that Barcelona comeback and then ultimately Liverpool winning the Champions League last season?
I mean, I remember feeling like I'd seen this before. it felt like the script was written and I was just watching it unfold without any control over what was happening, because it wasn't just that. I think Liverpool got an early goal, but they didn't really score again for a little while until I think maybe later in the first half. Yeah. They
had three goals in the second half.
Yeah. And I remember being really discouraged by the way that Barcelona were playing, and they did not look, they had kind of looked pretty bad away from home throughout that season, not just in La Liga, but in the Champions League especially. I think they struggled at Lyon, even when they came to Old Trafford and were very clearly the better team and got an early goal. And then we dominated them for 75 minutes after that. We just couldn't score because we were, you know, I think Diogo Dalot got our best chance on goal in that game. But I don't know. Anfield is also one of those stadiums where I think it, like the New Camp and like Old Trafford and like, I guess maybe the Bernabeu. I don't really care much for Real Madrid, but it has this energy on European nights that other clubs just lack. And you could just kind of feel that something was happening that I had no control over. That, you know, Liverpool were a team on the verge of greatness. And I think, you know, they were just waiting for a moment like that to kind of validate that feeling.
I remember the morning, or the day, because games, I live on the West Coast of the United States, so games, like even Champions League games during the week, are over at 2 or 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I remember the first leg against Barcelona, I thought Liverpool actually played pretty well, but still lost 3-0. And when that free kick went in, I just left work because I was at work. Messi's free kick goes in and he celebrates by jumping on the ground like a baby. That was the kind of the moment of doubt I had. I was like, we're not going to win anything this season. And we're probably the best team in the world. And I just remember being so deflated and just so like, I can't I can't do this anymore. Yeah. And just kind of having this whole like existential crisis about a silly game where 22 men run around in their pajamas really far away from where I live. And then the Newcastle game happened, and then the Barcelona game happened, and then just kind of I just knew that this mm-hmm. team, like you said, they were on the verge of greatness and they were going to achieve that. And I think this season, I know a lot of Manchester United fans want to say that the entire league is crap, and I don't think that's true. I think Manchester City's very good, and I think Liverpool are 20 points better than them.
Yep. And I don't know. There's this, the way that the Premier League has unfolded most of the last few seasons is that one team usually identifies themselves pretty early on, and they're able to keep up that momentum, and other teams just aren't really able to match it. I think you saw that from Chelsea under Jose Mourinho and under Antonio Conte in their two titles. Leicester to a degree, although Leicester was much more surprising just because they were Leicester. Yeah. And the only team chasing them was Tottenham, who also had not won the league in maybe they won it in like 62 or something like that.
I think 66 sounds about right.
Yeah, it was Jimmy Greaves era. Yeah. And then, you know, the Manchester City team that got 100 points. So I think we're kind of used to a team setting themselves apart in the Premier League, like Liverpool have done this year, but it's not to the extent that Liverpool have done this year, points wise. And also, it's a different team. You know, it kind of rotates. So I think it would be hypocritical to say that the Premier League is weak, because there have been four different champions in the last 5 years. And, you know, both teams in both European finals last year were Premier League teams. So
yeah. And Europa League final too.
Yeah.
Right? Arsenal was still in that.
Yeah, I meant. It's both European finals were all English teams,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then before that, Liverpool were in the Champions League final. I don't know. It's very different from, say, Italy or Germany, or France, where Bayern Munich, Juventus, and PSG are guaranteed to dominate every year. Like, I fully expect Manchester City to come back next season and probably challenge a lot differently than they did this year, or hopefully Manchester United, although that is a different point that maybe we can get to later.
I think that's an interesting conversation. We were kind of having it before we hit the record button, so maybe we should just have it now.
Yeah. Or actually, we do have to fit an ad break in here somewhere, so we can take the ad break now.
And okay.
In part two, we'll come back to talk about it. And we are back for part two. I'm joined by Mark Kastner of the Liverpool Offside, and we talked a good bit about how Jurgen Klopp has built this Liverpool team into the Premier League champions that they are now. That hurts to say. But
say it one more time.
Did you not get that?
Yeah, my headphones cut out.
All right. So Liverpool are a not record-setting 19-time Premier League champion club. And Jurgen Klopp has built a superpower and done it without necessarily the same financial resources that teams like Chelsea and City have had. But looking at this Manchester United team, a team that since Sir Alex Ferguson retired has not really had the hope of winning a Premier League title, what do you see, Mark, that you would take away as positives if you were a Manchester United fan?
I think the number one positive is just two words, is Bruno Fernandes. There's that graphic that was floating around this week from ESPN FC that was rightfully made fun of, comparing Bruno Fernandes' Premier League record since he got here to Liverpool's or whatever. But he's kind of the key difference that, and like for the last 2 years at least, Manchester United was crying out for a midfielder to be creative. And that hole was so obvious. It wasn't going to be filled by an old Juan Mata. It wasn't going to be filled by Jesse Lingard. You can't leave the creativity to Marcus Rashford, even though I think he's a brilliant player. He needs to play off somebody. And I was upset that United went and bought the right guy. I wanted them to spend a lot more money on James Madison and have kind of the same problems over and over again.
Dollar but General David Beckham. Didn't.
Go ahead.
Specifically with that number 10 role that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, from the moment he got here, really identified that was going to be the driving force of the offense that he wanted to play. And last season, he played Paul Pogba in that role for 6 or 7 games in the Premier League. And he scored a bunch of goals and he got a bunch of assists, not necessarily against the best of opposition. It was mostly mid-table or relegation-threatened teams. But you saw a side of Manchester United that you had not seen. And it was a side that expressed themselves and created a lot of chances and ended up scoring a lot of pretty cool goals. And that all died off pretty quickly when we got hit by injuries and then we lost a lot of momentum down the stretch. And this season, he's tried to replicate that with Pogba in more of a pivot role next to a defensive midfielder and playing either Lingard or Andreas Pereira at the number 10 spot, which has definitely not worked out. And both of those players have been exposed as possible, you know, exits after this season. And Bruno Fernandes fitting in almost immediately definitely has given us a big lift. But I saw a tweet yesterday, or maybe it was this morning, by Manchester United that was one of those side-by-side videos of the counterattacking goal that Bruno scored against Brighton on Tuesday and the goal that Cristiano Ronaldo scored against Arsenal
Like
2009. And I quote tweeted it and I was like, I love getting excited about this as much as the next person. But
yeah,
the top one was from a UEFA Champions League semifinal against Arsenal back when Arsenal were good.
Yeah.
And this one is against Brighton in the Premier League.
Yeah. And Brighton's not very good. They're not going to get relegated, but they're also not very good.
No.
I see a whole lot of similarities with Bruno Fernandes and some guy named Felipe Coutinho that Liverpool had for a little bit. Just in terms of the difference, he's a switch that you flip and you go from maybe a kind of a stoic, slow turning wheel and your offense doesn't really work to kind of this electric sort of free flowing attack. And I'm interested in seeing what that does for Manchester United, because it didn't take Liverpool to greatness. It took them pretty close, and then he decided to leave before Liverpool got there. And I don't I think that's kind of where the analogy or the similarities fall flat, is because I don't see Bruno Fernandes wanting to move away from Manchester United, obviously, because he just got there.
And he's probably making a lot more money than he did at Sporting. So.
Yeah, or
it's probably a nice bump too.
What is he gonna do? Where's he gonna go? He's not gonna go anywhere. This is even a ridiculous conversation to even suggest happening.
Yeah.
Not happening.
I mean, the player that we were at threat of losing though was Paul Pogba, and for reasons maybe similar to what Coutinho left Liverpool for, is that he thought he would be going somewhere that, you know, greatness would follow. And that hasn't really worked out for Coutinho. And I'm not saying that we're 100% keeping Paul Pogba, but I bet he is a hell of a lot more convinced that he should stay than he was 6 months ago.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think Coutinho's a horror story for a lot of players around the world right now, that you don't necessarily, the grass isn't greener on the other side, especially if you're going to play at the new camp.
and find out that Barcelona is not as well run as we previously thought it was.
Yeah. And I also think like it would be really smart for Paul Pogba to not leave Manchester United, as painful as that is for me to say, because I really like him and I really don't like Manchester United. but I think when you look at Paul Pogba's career and when you see when he's at the best, the type of teams he's in when he is playing at his best, like when he won the World Cup with France, is you have a creative focal point in the team that's not him, and you have free-flowing attackers with that creative focal point where he can just kind of be this midfielder that does kind of he's the fifth attacker, basically.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that can kind of sound insulting. So I don't want your listeners to be like, oh, he doesn't think Paul Pogba is very good. That's not what I mean at all. I think when you're having a winger or an attacking midfielder having to mark a defensive midfielder who happens to be Paul Pogba, I think your attack is going to be very good.
Yeah.
That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And I guess it's not just that the pressure isn't necessarily on him all the time now, although that is definitely a big burden lifted off his shoulders. But as a central midfielder, I feel like, and especially as a central midfielder who cost a lot of money, like,
yeah,
Paul Pogba's transfer fee was an insane amount of money. But there comes this expectation with central midfielders to be possibly more than what a central midfielder is capable of. Like, obviously, we've seen a lot of generational talents come through. You know, both of our clubs have experienced that. You know, like Steven Gerrard, Paul Scholes type of player. We see Frank Lampard at Chelsea, these sort of game-changing central midfielders. But if you take them, if you take away Didier Drogba and Michael Essien and, you know, Damien Duff and Claude Makélélé, and you give him Andreas Pereira,
yeah,
and, you know, a young Anthony Martial and Jesse Lingard, you know, you're not going to get a Premier League winning team just because you still have Frank Lampard. And, yeah, you know, I don't want to say that Paul Pogba is automatically one of the greats, but it's been very clear throughout his career that he's had that sort of ability and potential. And I'm really excited to see how well he can do for us in a team where he's not the only world-class player.
Yeah. And I think there's just been so much expectation, I think, even that's not even harsh enough of a word. I think, obviously, I'm talking about Graham Souness, who happens to be a Liverpool legend, but I don't think his opinions of Paul Pogba come through because he played for Liverpool. I think they come through because he's racist. Yeah. Or even like winning the World Cup and kind of being on that team, and then, you know, just kind of being the, even who he happened to hire as his agent. Like, I think there are criticisms of Paul Pogba that are fair, but I think a bulk of the criticisms that we've heard about Paul Pogba over the last 3 years or so since he's been at Manchester United, I think are very unfair. And just kind of that, he's played for three managers there, right?
Two. Two. Two? He was in Jose Mourinho's first window.
Got it. Okay. I wasn't sure if he got there before Mourinho or not, but just going to Manchester United in Jose Mourinho's first window, like, that's just kind of, I think, tells you the whole story of,
yeah,
like, okay, maybe we need, yeah, to be a little bit more patient with this player. And he needs, I think, with the possibility of him leaving, although I don't think that's going to happen anymore, like, he needs to be more patient with the team.
Yeah. But I mean, we see this season, whenever he does play, you know, he's got really good chemistry with Marcus Rashford already. He and Martial have played together for France, I think, before. Yeah, because Martial's first season at United was when he kind of like became a regular for France for a little while. So they had played together before, and they've played together since Pogba got there. And two players that have really grown up a lot over the past two seasons, I think, and especially this season, that they're both on the verge of 20 goals. I mean, it seems like Pogba notices these things. And
you would hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. And Solskjaer thought last summer was a good time to invest in the back line because we had a record setting in a bad way season defensively. And now we have the second or third best defensive record in the league.
Yeah. Not
saying that, you know, Harry Maguire, we obviously spent a lot of money on, but when it pays off, or when it seems to work out, as it has with him and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, you don't really think about that as much.
Yeah, I think I was having this conversation with a Manchester United fan who is also a very good friend of mine. And he was talking about Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire. And he was saying, like, do you really care about what a transfer fee is as a fan? Like, really? Like, do you care?
Yeah.
And he kind of turned the question on me. Like, do you care that Alisson cost all that money? No, I don't. And then his point was basically like, yes, Harry Maguire was more expensive than Virgil van Dijk. That is like a fact that we're never going to get over just because like that's kind of how transfers work. And he might not be as good as Virgil van Dijk, but he can still transform a defense. And he has. Like,
yeah,
you can't argue with that. Like, I think he makes some – I think there's criticisms of him, of course, like that Tottenham goal that was scored where he, like, just couldn't turn around. But yeah.
Something that's very hard for him, apparently.
Yeah, because he is the size of a cruise ship, like, literally. Yeah. So yeah, of course, like there's weaknesses and you're gonna have silly fans on Twitter tweeting out that video forever whenever something bad happens, but like it's hard to look at what Manchester United have done over the last two seasons and not seeing a drastic improvement.
Yeah.
Now I think there's a ton of questions still out there for some players in the squad and certainly the manager. But I think they've all earned the right to, like, prove themselves or have the opportunity to fail, I should say.
Yeah. And I know the last time we talked, which was in January before the Liverpool United game, I think it was before because I probably wouldn't have agreed to do it if it was after. But you said that you were not confident in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's ability as manager. And I kind of agreed with you because that was definitely at a point where we hadn't signed Bruno yet.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like it was going to happen. And not long before that, I think, was when Marcus Rashford literally broke his back trying to carry this team.
Yeah.
And it just did not seem like we were headed in the right direction at all. So 6 months later, with everything that has happened, very many games later. Has your view changed of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, or do you still?
I think so. On that show, I probably talked about Brendan Rodgers, because I see he's just happens to be the last Liverpool manager before Jurgen Klopp, and he got pretty close to winning a title. Yada yada yada.
Barclays Manager of the Year 2013-14.
That's peak Barclays.
Yeah.
I'm not confident in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I don't think he's going to be the next manager. I don't think he's going to be the manager at Manchester United when they next win the title. I've been wrong before, but I think he, in an area that I think he's proven me wrong since Bruno's come in, so I think he's shown the ability to get out of his way and he's kind of put his whatever ego he has aside to let this team kind of figure itself out. I think we saw the downsides of that when you guys played Tottenham, Like, there was no influence from the manager on that game, and players on the field figured out a way to get that point.
Yeah, and also didn't start Paul Pogba to try and prove a point about starting Paul Pogba.
But I think you see in games like the Sheffield United game in particular, I don't think you can really take much from the Brighton game, but you see a manager not getting in his way and letting his players do what his players do, and that is a positive result. Can he keep growing? Yes. Like, you see those Twitter polls all the time, like, who's a better manager, Solskjaer, Lampard, or Arteta? Well, Solskjaer's been a manager for like 12 years, so is he gonna continue to change? Like, I hope not, from my point of view, but maybe. I still have a lot of doubts, and when somebody like Maurizio Pochettino is literally sitting at home taking pictures with his kid and doing nothing, it makes me kind of like think, like, what should United do here?
And, yeah.
But I think there's a lot to be praised for United kind of picking a manager and saying, like, okay, at least for the next few years, this is the guy who's going to kind of do this rebuild. And I think that is probably what you need. It just so happens that there's this other guy sitting out there that might do a better job in the long run. Who knows?
That took a 6th, 7th place Premier League team to the Champions League final last year.
And then that team hired your guys' old manager, and now look at them.
Well, Mark, the Premier League has a history of hiring the same people over and over again, despite the evidence of history about those managers.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Roy Hodgson, cough. Roy Hodgson, cough.
Sam Allardyce. David Moyes.
Oh, David Moyes, boy. What a fella.
Yeah. All right, so I guess to kind of end this discussion, I wanted to ask you a little bit about a piece you wrote when Liverpool did, win the Premier League or whatever. And you talked a lot about everything about football that's great apart from the actual football. And I think you did it really well. So I wanted to kind of give you the platform, and we can discuss, you know, as fans of clubs that have experienced moments like this, you know, what that kind of means.
Yeah, I mean, like, that piece came to me in kind of a surprise. I'm glad you didn't bring up the inevitable thing that I wrote in February or whatever. While I think I'm very fond of that piece, I just, a whole global pandemic and stuff happened. And
right.
Anyways, I didn't know that I was going to write this piece when I wrote it, but when I started to write it, actually. And I know I'm not making a ton of sense right now, but I just started thinking about what being a Liverpool fan has meant to me. I've been a fan since about 2003 or 4. My memory is getting foggier as I get closer and closer to 30. And I just start thinking about, like, okay, if I were to boil this down to one thing, what is this about? And it just, all these people just started popping into my mind. And it was, like, abundantly clear to me that I needed to write something about the relationships that I've had. And in the piece, I didn't get into any specific relationships because I just didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings, or didn't want to leave anybody out, or it just wasn't important to actually talk about the specific relationships that I've had with Liverpool fans that have changed my life. And I just started thinking about, like, how happy I am that all of these people in my life get to experience this thing that they've never experienced before, or most of them haven't experienced before. Some of them were actually alive in 1990. They were also alive in 1989 when Arsenal won at Anfield.
Yeah. There's a good documentary on Netflix about that.
Yeah, like they were alive then too. So I just thought, like, I need to write this sort of letter to all these people. And that's kind of where the piece was born from. It was just me kind of thinking, like, if I needed to say something to each one of these people, what would I say? So that's what I did.
And you use the phrase a lot, that this kind of means more, as Liverpool winning the Premier League title, something that they hadn't done before. Because, it was the 92-93 season was the first Premier League season.
Yeah.
But Liverpool were still a constant. You know, they're one of the five teams that has never been relegated from the Premier League ever. And
trophies in between their two top flight championships. So it's not like
And, you know, they've won FA Cups, they've won League Cups, they've won the Champions League twice. This is a club that has remained at least near the summit of football without achieving this Premier League title. And as someone who's seen, you know, my team win the Premier League a few times, but hasn't done so lately, I understand that feeling of just finally being the best. But you guys have felt that without being Premier League champions. So what was different in the feeling this time?
I think it was, I think it's a feeling of validation more than anything else.
Yeah.
Because, like, I was pretty young. I was in high school when Liverpool won the Champions League in 2005. And obviously the story and narrative around that game is obvious, is that Liverpool weren't the best.
Yeah. That whole kind of season, it was
I mean, they finished sixth. And just even in that literal game, like, they were against playing the best team in the world. And, you know, I don't need to belabor the point that everybody's heard a dozen times, that Liverpool came back and won the European Cup in 2005. but, and then, like, there's been so many seasons where Liverpool have been incredible. 08-09, which happens to be kind of the only time Liverpool and United have fought for a title. Mm-hmm. Liverpool became the first team, I think, in top flight history, not even just Premier League history, to only lose two games and not win the trophy.
Yeah.
And then there's the Hicks and Gillette era, which is just miserable, both not only for Liverpool, but also some of the most miserable years of my life. My mom passed away, and I've written about this stuff before. And then 13-14 was so emotional, and Liverpool were so good, and they still didn't win the title. And then even last season, like, I felt like we were the best team in the world, and we didn't even win our domestic league, even though we won the European Cup. And that's always been a thing that, like, as a Liverpool fan, having to talk to Manchester United fans specifically, who just – oddly enough, all my best friends are Manchester United fans. like, it's always been that thing. Oh, you've never won the Premier League. Okay. Like, and then just, but now we have. And now the jokes, mm-hmm. Congrats, you've won as many Premier Leagues as Blackburn. But it doesn't matter. Like, only six teams have won the Premier League. So six or seven, maybe eight. Can't remember. But, I think it's validating more than anything else. And it's, I think, even more important to kind of the anxiety that every Liverpool fan feels when Liverpool gets close to winning a title, is everything falls apart. That's kind of been the history of what's happened. And we've already spent a ton of time talking about how this Liverpool team isn't going to fall apart anytime soon. So we don't need to go back and talk about that.
Yeah. And I think that is something that has set them apart from the other teams that got close. you know, the 08-09 team, it maybe didn't feel like they were going to fall apart like they did in the Hicks and Gillette era. But, you know, at that time, and even in the couple of seasons before that, when they weren't challenging for the Premier League title, they were still constants in the Champions League. You know, they got to the final again in 07, which unfortunately did not end up being a match between United and Liverpool. And they got to the semifinals in 07-08. And they had those X-factor players like Steven Gerrard and Fernando Torres that even if you weren't the best team on the day, they could step up and provide an individual moment that, you know, they're the players that you want to complete your championship team.
Yeah. It's so funny to think about because life sort of happens in decades.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing that I've started noticing as I get older. And that team was basically a decade ago, give and take here and there. And like, I just remember being in high school or graduating high school and being so like, Fernando Torres and Steven Gerrard are like the best to ever do this in a Liverpool jersey. And, you know, as a 18 or 19 year old, that's kind of a naive thing to say, but like your whole world's kind of changing. But, I remember thinking at the time, like I might never see something like this again. And then Luis Suarez comes along and it's like, okay, that is truly special. And you think, how can a player like that ever play for Liverpool again when Real Madrid and Barcelona and Manchester City and Manchester United and PSG exist? Like, we just don't have the money and we still don't. But Jurgen Klopp comes along and just kind of somehow makes this team. And you're just like, okay, actually, we may never see a team like this again.
Yeah. But it is really those managers that can make a difference for a team that's maybe not the best on paper, because you have somebody who's not only able to identify and get the best out of talented players, but is somebody who now attracts other talented players from other leagues. And maybe money is an issue. I think that came into play with Timo Werner. But Liverpool still definitely were Timo Werner's first choice, you know?
Yeah.
And we're obviously in very unique circumstances for a transfer market to take place. But, you know, who's to say Liverpool won't get the next big striker next summer or something like that? You know, they've become trustworthy, I guess, when it comes to delivering results.
Yeah, even like there's the famous kind of like Klopp is the first person to point this out, but Mo Salah wasn't their first choice. They wanted Julian Brandt. Who is also a very good player now still, but you know, he was concerned about playing time because of people like Adam Lallana and Philippe Coutinho. So
which
they
is
had
a very funny thing to hear about Adam Lallana.
Yes, but hey, okay, whatever. Daniel Sturridge too. He was still playing for Liverpool then. But, you know, I would be surprised if we go another transfer window without buying anybody, just because I think there are some that, like, you can't get stale. And we learned from the best, Sir Alex Ferguson, who always bought somebody after he won a title. So even if it's just, like, we bought Minamino in the winter. Even if it's somebody like that, we'll have some outgoings. I'm sure there'll be some players that come.
Just as long as you buy the Roy Keane and not the Dimitar Berbatov after you win a championship.
I mean, Berbatov had some good games for you guys.
Yeah, there was one against was it Liverpool? It was pretty good.
Yeah. And he won a... The Berbatov, Ronaldo, and Rooney thing won a Champions League, right?
No, we bought Berbatov after we won the Champions League in 08, and that kind of unsettled the Tevez, Ronaldo, Rooney front three. Sir Alex wanted to give his record signing playing time.
Well, that'll
happen. And then we ended up yeah, we ended up losing both Ronaldo and Tevez the next summer. So, yeah.
What can you do?
Yeah.
West Ham legend, Carlos Tevez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also,
I think Sir Alex Ferguson's kind of he is obviously the best manager probably in football history. And I think like there's a lot of lessons that I believe that I've said this on your show specifically, that I think Jurgen Klopp has taken aspects of Sir Alex Ferguson's philosophy and applied them to Liverpool. And I think he'll kind of continue to do the same.
Yeah, I actually specifically remember comparing Jurgen Klopp to Sir Alex Ferguson in certain ways and being very worried that listeners would react poorly to that. It was last season, I think, because it was before they'd even won the Premier League by that point. But
Yeah. So I think Liverpool's gonna go away anytime soon. But I do have an interesting question for you.
Okay.
Who's gonna win number 21 first?
I would not be surprised if Liverpool equaled 20 before we could win another one. But I'm going to say Manchester United for two reasons. One, I'm a fan and I really want it to happen. And two, I think that football now has sort of evolved into an era where it's really hard to find sustained success. Where even if you're a team that has Modric and Ronaldo and Benzema and Bale and, you know, just infinite piles of money that you could replenish every year, it's not always good enough because the landscape is constantly changing and there's so much more focus on results, and it's such a results oriented business that things are constantly changing that I don't know if you could find a way for Liverpool to be as sustainable as some of those other teams that were in the past.
Yeah.
Although I could be very wrong and Liverpool could be on the verge of a three-peat or something like that.
I think I probably agree with that actually deep down. I think, this team is obviously capable of doing a three-peat. They practically have in the last few years, like in terms of intensity and level of play, although whatever. I think if Liverpool win three of the next four titles, well, two of the next four, Jurgen Klopp has 4 years left on his contract. I think that seems doable. So that's three and five. That doesn't sound, and you could theoretically see Mo Salah and Sadio Mane and Roberto Firmino and Virgil van Dijk and Alisson kind of staying at their peak until 32. That seems plausible, you know. I don't know if it'll happen. I definitely think we'll equal 20 within the next two seasons, three seasons, but whether we get 21, I don't know.
Yeah. I think age is also a weird thing in football because it's kind of weird to develop expectations for people who are reach the top of their game when they're 29 or 30, because there's just no really accurate way of telling where they go from there, unless they're like Messi or Ronaldo or someone.
For sure.
And especially when it comes to the age of managers, I think we saw this with Jose Mourinho, which is, I think, a big part of why it's really sad to see his career has ended up the way that it has. Not just because I'm a Manchester United fan, but when he came to the Premier League, he was actually innovative and changed it was a seismic shift in not just power in the Premier League, but in the way that other teams tried to play and emulated the champions and the way that they tried to beat the champions. And I think you see a lot more of managers now that when they find success when they're young, they don't necessarily stay in the same place. Not only is it harder to build sustainable success, but there's so many other factors like money and club ownership and even just like the way that people personally define what loyalty means to them.
Pep Guardiola is the perfect example.
Yeah.
Like, he probably should still be Barcelona manager.
Yeah.
But he wanted to conquer literally every country. So,
yeah.
And find the easiest pathway to do.
Yeah. And he wants to be the first manager to spend $1 trillion or something like that.
Right. Yeah. There was some graphic comparing how much money Sir Alex spent in his career at Manchester United compared to, it was like a somewhat defense of Guardiola being like, you know, this is how much he's spent in his career and it's nowhere near Sir Alex.
30-year difference.
Yeah.
And like, of course, like that bothers me. I even hate comparing transfer fees between players. Like I kind of touched on with the Maguire and Van Dijk thing. Like, yeah. Is it a success at the club that in the context of what's happening with that player? That's the only thing I really judge transfers off of. Just because, like, it's not my money. I don't care.
Yeah. But I think the point I was trying to get to was, do you think that Jurgen Klopp stays, like, do you think that he views Liverpool as kind of his forever club in the way that United sort of became for Sir Alex?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's his last job. Unless something like he takes over the German national team. I think he talks a lot about his family and how much he loves his family. And I don't think he wants to manage until he dies or like turns into Roy Hodgson or is kind of just this dinosaur of the game. Yeah. I mean, look at how he left Dortmund. I think it's kind of the perfect example. Like, when it's time, it's time. And
yeah.
I think that'll kind of be the same thing. So he's got 4 years left on his contract at Liverpool. That will make him Liverpool manager for 9 years. He will be, I think, 56 at that time. I could see him probably staying for two or three seasons after that. But... I also wouldn't be surprised if in 4 years he's kind of done managing professional football. So I certainly don't see him like leaving and going and taking over anybody else. I think Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool are perfect for each other.
Yeah. I think it will probably also depend on what challenges Liverpool face because, you know, as difficult as it is taking on a team like Manchester City, it's also pretty fun. You know, when like those title races from all of Manchester, like all of Manchester United's titles compared, the ones that I had the most fun with were the ones that went down to the last day of the season.
What about the last second?
Sorry, I had to. That was good. Yeah, but I mean, even that season, I'll go back and rewatch games from. There's just, you know, that's the kind of competitive draw to football that you desire when you're a fan of a team that's constantly challenging. And it's something that Manchester United has lacked, I think, for the past few years that I've really missed about football. But that comes with its own other, you know, fun takeaways or whatever, and not so fun takeaways.
I think Jurgen Klopp's done a really good job of making the challenge internal within the team, within himself, within the squad. He became Liverpool manager 2 years ish after 13-14, year and a half. And you know, he said that kind of famous line, "I have to turn the fans in." From doubters to believers. I think he's managed kind of the expectations of being Liverpool manager insanely well. And kind of like, I think he's literally done a perfect job because nobody else has been able to do this. So,
yeah.
And even yeah. yesterday in his press conference, like, I got really amped up when somebody asked him about, like, defending his title. And he said, there's no defending our title. We have to attack the title. And I was like, yeah, cool. That sounds dope.
Nice. I like those words.
Obviously, that didn't happen today when they played Manchester City. But
right.
You can't take this title away. You can yeah. only take the next one away.
Yeah.
So,
But that's the kind of attitude that you want to see from, you know, managers of these clubs. And that's something that definitely did not endear Jose Mourinho to the Manchester United fans is when he had his football heritage rant.
Yeah. Is that the same one where he said the best thing I've ever done was finish second with Manchester United?
No, that was during that season. We lost to Sevilla in the round of 16 Champions League. And at Old Trafford, we basically let them have most of the possession in the second half. And, you know, they went and scored two goals against us. And we're like, oh, now we have to score. We got one back from Lukaku. But other than that, it was just a very deflating show. Everything that we've come to fear about post-Sir Alex Ferguson, Manchester United. And he gets up to the podium before the FA Cup match the next week. And he's asked about it a lot. And he goes on this rant and says, championship teams come from, or they have this like established football heritage is what he kept repeating. And he's like, if you look at Manchester United before I came, it's like they were not in the Champions League. Like, they had not won a trophy in so X amount of years. And you don't have like Premier League winners in this side and stuff like that. But when you're a manager of Manchester United, none of that shit matters. Because the entire world is watching you every week. And whether you're good enough or not, if you're in the Champions League, you have to try to win the damn thing.
Yeah, you have a noodle sponsor and an official brake pad sponsor and yeah. all this stuff.
Yeah, it's like, what are all these sponsorships worth if we're not going to yeah. go out and try? And like, I think part of it is definitely because for 2.5 decades, we had a manager who built his entire legacy off of, okay, what can we win this year? You know, it was like, if we can win the FA Cup this year, then that's what we're going to try and win. It's like, if we're good enough to win two trophies, then that's what we're going to try and do. And, you know, just building this culture of success.
Didn't Alex Ferguson always used to say, winning isn't good, it's normal?
Yeah, like, after winning the treble, he's like, well, you know, we just got to go do it again. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, constantly bringing in players looking for a championship mentality. And I'm not saying that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has that same level of understanding about being a manager. But I feel a lot more confident in him than I did Jose Mourinho because it feels like he understands that expectation of the club.
Yeah. Does he still not park in Alex Ferguson's parking spot? Because that's weird.
I don't know. But, like, Sir Alex still works at Old Trafford, so...
Oh, I mean...
But I think the manager's spot or whatever is like, yeah, that's Sir Alex's or whatever. I have no idea.
That's funny. That's
Carrington, actually. So Sir Alex doesn't go there every day. Yeah.
As soon as he starts parking in that parking spot, I will believe that... Yeah. Win a title or something.
He's worthy of it.
Yeah.
He thinks that he is worthy of a parking spot at Carrington at a club that he manages.
Yeah. And probably he's getting paid more money than Alex Ferguson got paid just because that's how things work with the Glazers.
Yeah. Imagine the teams start retiring like parking spots at trainings at their training centers instead of like retiring jersey numbers or whatever, which even that I don't think is necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that stuff's weird.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Do you have any parting thoughts?
No. Liverpool Premier League champions is a cool thing to say. I've been doing things as a Premier League champion all week. Like before this podcast, I went and bought beer as a Premier League champion. I have been working as a Premier League champion. I've been brushing my teeth as a Premier League champion. So it's great. May it continue.
I was not the last time United won the Premier League with Sir Alex's last season was this year that I graduated from high school. So I have not bought beer as a Premier League champion yet. So that's one thing you've got over me, Mark.
Yeah, but I haven't really I haven't celebrated with my friends because I'm locked inside because our country's failing a global pandemic. So after the City Chelsea game last week, that kind of sealed the deal. I went and sat in a park and drank beer by myself for like 2 hours. and kind of thought up the piece that I talked about, was through those emotions, but I couldn't like go celebrate with my friends.
Yeah. Well, if United do get to a cup final, whether it's FA Cup or Europa League, my roommate is also a Manchester United fan. So I think we're going to buy some champagne and shake that up if we do actually win the thing. So I'm looking forward to that.
That should be.
Yeah. Mark, thank you for joining me. And begrudgingly, congratulations on Liverpool becoming champions for a 19th time and not 20th. Yeah. And a first Premier League, not a 13th Premier League or anything. But, sure. You know, pretty good.
I mean, the song isn't 13 times.
No, it's not. But maybe we should rework how we value past trophies to adapt to modern times. All right. Mark, thanks again for joining me.
Of course.